shorts and bag.
That's a nasty looking finger, lady.
You got the bait?
What? No.
Hey, I got your fertilizer.
We made you.
Welcome back, Interweb friends. This is Stop the Movie I Want to Get Out. Hollywood making terrible movies. Us making fun of them. I'm Alex Dunbar. I'm your composer this week.
Conductor.
Curator.
Curator, yes.
I'm all of those things and maybe more. I'm joined by Cody Wolf.
Hashtag.
I was hoping that would be one. Jack Estabrook.
Shift three.
And Brian Mueller.
Foxtrot, this is Big Top. I'm bringing out the whole package.
That is true. And we were just saying how this movie isn't dirty, but that is the dirtiest line in a not dirty movie.
And Gerard Butler looks like he takes so much delight in saying it.
He does. He really does.
He's like when he read the script, he circled that line. And
there was
like,
something creepy about it.
Yeah.
Our movie this week, 2014's Olympus Has 13. Fallen. 2013.
Yeah.
Where is the time
Well,
gone?
The special effects look like it's from 1997, so.
Wow.
It's very mist-like.
Olympus Has Fallen, the first in the Olympus Has Fallen film series that
we just found out.
Literally seconds before hitting record.
Breaking news to Jack and Brian and I, known to Cody, that there's a sequel coming out in March.
When we decided to do this movie, I was like, "Why? This seems like a random movie." And then I saw the trailer on TV for London Has Fallen, and I was like...
Well, you saw it on TV?
Yeah. Yeah. I think it was either on TV or like an ad. I can't remember what it was, but I saw it. It was like running.
I was like,
that must be why we must be capitalizing on the sequel. So I mentioned that, and Alex is like, what?
Yeah. Like, I thought this sequel would be like borderline straight to DVD.
I think I saw a TV.
Not a joke. I just looked this up. Sequel, $100 million budget.
Did this movie make an impression on audiences that it needed a sequel? I mean, I barely heard of it.
Hold on,
when
Jack.
I saw the trailers.
You might be previewing a So Wrong It's Right question coming up later in this very episode.
Okay.
You know what's really sad is this wasn't even the worst White House being taken by a terrorist movie of the year.
Yeah.
I didn't see White House Down.
Oh my, this was so much better than White House Down.
I know, we may have to see that.
I mean, I guess... Both were pretty ridiculous. This one, obviously, we'll get into what this one features. The White House Down with Channing Tatum and Jamie Foxx like features scenes where like Channing Tatum's like shooting a Gatling gun out of an SUV in the White House lawn at terrorists. So, you know, take your pick.
Okay. All right, let's start.
This one had the opposite, terrorists shooting Gatling guns out of trucks at the White House. So.
Yeah, that's...
Gatling guns is...
They really want to separate.
Lots of Gatling guns and blood and explosions.
Yeah. So, this movie starts at Camp David.
We know because there's overly patriotic music and a big sign that says Camp David.
They do.
And you always, and as we sometimes see in these terrible movies, they unnecessarily tell us what time it is every scene. It's 1:15.
And announce who all the characters are.
It does have a
season of the witch fascination with time. And this is actually... For once, not a movie where that's really a question of what's the time frame.
Especially because there was no like set deadline. Like,
yeah, it's
the
not
deadline
like
at 4
a.m. the president dies.
The deadline was dawn. Which even when he said dawn, I was like, well, what's dawn really mean? Is that like as soon as you see the sunrise?
It depends what
like,
time of year it is.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, that is.
So it's like this daylight like, savings time?
This only they have like 7:02 p.m. and 5 p.m. And then it's like no actual like payoff to that.
You
like,
have till dawn. Now, is that Korean time or American time?
Well, they also, we'll get into this later, but the stakes in this movie are very hard to understand because there's like, three different stakes at different points that are put forward, and you're not really sure which one's the priority.
And one of the stakes gets resolved very quickly.
Yeah,
with the sun.
That was really quick. Yeah. Like that was like da da, and I was like, oh well, that tension just deflated.
Yeah, like that actually almost shouldn't have even have been one of the stakes.
Well, the movie opens with this like, I guess it's like election season, and the president's chilling at Camp David, I guess, and he's going to this swanky. He's on his way to the swanky charity event to raise money, I'm assuming, for his campaign.
Well, I would just before that, he's boxing with Gerard Butler hilariously small ring, which I feel like the prop department and was not given enough room to build a proper ring, and everyone's sort of trying to shoot. They're clearly trying to shoot around the fact that this ring is the size of a large now, dining room table.
Is there a boxing ring at Camp David?
There could be. Who
knows?
Is that how they settle disputes? Is they just take it to the ring? And
they might be.
Some presidents can box. Barack has a mean left hook.
Sure. Yeah, they have like a basketball court. It just seems weird to have
one of your Secret Service guys punching the president in the head.
That was kind of weird.
Yeah. Well, I was a little confused at this point because going into this film, like I said, when I saw the trailers, I just kind of rolled my eyes and didn't bother to even research it or watch it. So I knew it.
Air Force One.
I did, and I was upset that nobody said, "Give me back my plane." No, I was not sure because I didn't read the cast listings or check the IMDb at all. I didn't know which one was supposed to be the president. I knew one of them was obviously the president. So I was like, "So which actor is Aaron Eckhart the president, or is it?" Because, I mean, obviously, dialogue very quickly
going
establishes.
Going into the movie, I thought Morgan Freeman was the president.
Boom, boom, boom. Yeah.
Well, it's good. And as you said, Aaron
just
Eckhart's
the president.
Just
because you saw
Invictus. Yeah, just because you...
Nelson Mandela's the president?
Yeah. So, and Aaron Eckhart's president, and then Gerard Butler is like his lead... Secret Service agent.
Yes.
And they're kind of, they're friendly.
And he's, then, like a, he's like a, an uncle to his son.
Yeah, they're friend with his son. We've got Ashley Judd.
Ashley Judd, yes.
Ashley Judd plays the president's wife. And she came out and I was like, wow, already this movie has like, I've seen like four people who would have been headliners in a 2002
Dylan
movie.
McDermott is in the scene,
Dylan
too.
Dylan McDermott is in it.
This is another Secret Service guy. We got Gerard Butler. We have Aaron Eckhart. We have Ashley Judd.
If you were making like a cop thriller in 2002, everyone in this movie's cast would have been your lead. Yeah. Now in 2013, nothing. You know.
I wish Edward Burns was one of the Secret Service agents.
Oh, that would be awesome.
This movie, lacking he is Edward really the main 2002 lacking person in here.
He needs to be in this movie. They got to get him in. They got to get him in Moscow Has Fallen.
Yeah. So they're going, the president's going to some kind of super fancy, I don't know, party.
Fundraiser.
Yeah,
I'm sure. Because they get the sense, he says something like, oh, elections are such a headache. So I would imagine he's running for re-election.
I guess so. And they're loading everyone into the motorcade. And just in case anybody at home wasn't paying close attention, you have never heard more talk in a movie about seatbelts than you do in the moments leading up to this.
Well, yeah. the film needed a positive message because from this moment on, it's a bloodbath. So they really wanted a positive message so the critics wouldn't, you know.
They didn't want anyone dying because they weren't wearing their
seatbelt. Exactly.
Someone died because they were wearing their seatbelt, though.
That's true.
Oh, that is true. Yeah. That is a mixed message. Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe we shouldn't wear our seatbelts.
I don't know.
Oh, my God. Well, pull the PSAs. Don't wear your seatbelts.
And I'm a little unclear on what happens here. They're driving over a bridge. Something causes the first crash.
Car in the line, like there's, they don't show you. They hit something.
Yeah, what is it?
I thought they were attacked because I was expecting a film about the president gets kidnapped.
You thought
right?
the action so, was just going to start.
So I literally thought, well, okay, we're driving, and it actually startled me, like pop, like crash. It's a POV shot from the driver's perspective, and something gets in the way, and the windshield cracks, there's a pow, the car slides, and I said, well, maybe they were hit with something.
I thought they just, like, slid on the ice. I looked away for a second and heard, like, the impact, and I just figured
it wasn't a deer. There was nothing in the way. Well, I mean, thought this was the moment where the bad guys are going to roll up and take out the Secret Service agents and kidnap the president, and I thought this is when it was going to happen.
I thought it was the ghost of Ronald Reagan.
I think the road is just icy. You know how it says bridges may ice over?
For all this talk of seatbelts and driving carefully, this crash seems to happen at 75 miles an hour.
Yeah, they were driving pretty quickly. I mean, they showed in some of the scenes, and it's like pouring down snow.
The SUV crashes through the bridge.
Teetering. Yeah.
It's teetering, like went through the entire side of the bridge.
It's like Beetlejuice.
Oh yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, that's true.
they're literally trying desperately to get Ashley Judd out. The first lady's trapped and they're like pushing down on the back bumper of the car to keep it from going over, and
they're trying to keep it over, and Gerard Butler,
a lot of F-bombs are getting thrown out left and right.
He cuts the president out and Grant gets him out.
Right.
And he's not able to save Ashley Judd, and the
Why
SUV
didn't he just cut
over.
Her seatbelt?
I think he couldn't reach. The other guy couldn't get could, in the other in side.
Her door Why didn't he was, give the president the knife?
It's true.
That's actually a good... Well,
they were just like sitting there.
As soon as you take the president out, it like lessens the weight and it's going to fall.
Here's another logical question. Apart from having this setup for tension between the two characters that really goes nowhere, what's the point in having the first lady fall to her death anyway?
Well, I think
so they could get Gerard Butler out of the White House.
Yes.
Well, they could have that happen in any fashion. I guess it's more dramatic, I think, or I think he needed something to atone for.
Yes.
But it seemed like it didn't make, because the description of the movie called him a disgraced secret service agent.
Yeah, he wasn't really disgraced.
But it's like he saved the president. That's what he's supposed to do.
Angela Bassett's even like, disgraced. You did a great job.
He did exactly what he's supposed to do. He saved the president's life.
Yeah, he saved the president's life. He wasn't able to save the first lady.
Right.
And then Angela Bassett's like, you did, it cuts to 18 months later, and Secret Service director Angela Bassett's like, you did the right thing. You did a great job. It's just hard for the president to see you. So
now
Gerard
he's
Butler's
like
now at the Treasury Department.
Treasury, yep.
And it's like, okay. Oh, and by the way,
you saved the president's life.
I say that Angela.
Here's a desk.
Here's a desk job. I say Angela Bassett's the Secret Service director. Does anyone know how we know that in the movie?
She has a lower third.
A lower third. Yep. A graphic comes up. I've never seen that in a movie before.
It happens a lot.
I've seen it in movies where it's like they're playing real people, I think.
Maybe, yeah.
Where it's like, oh, this is supposed to be, you know,
it was,
whoever, but...
It was pretty clear to be a just fictional from the scene. Like, yeah, I don't know
you don't need that. All you need is that you can get it from the dialogue or the way that she interacts with him, that this is his superior officer.
Yeah.
I love the dialogue in this scene when Gerard Butler's asking how things are, and I don't remember, what is the son's name again?
Connor.
Yeah.
He's like, how's Connor doing? She's like, Connor, the president's son. Yeah, well,
that was
he misses his mom.
That was great.
He misses his mom, Ashley Judd, who fell in that car into the icy river on that night.
Remember, his mom was the one you failed to save.
Yeah. That's right.
You saved the president, but not his wife, just to read.
But the kid was okay because the kid was conveniently riding in
the car.
This
is why you're at a
desk
now.
That was great. Yeah.
By the way, is Gerard Butler doing an American accent?
He is doing okay at times, but at times it slips through his Scottish.
It comes and goes. Yeah. I like Gerard Butler a lot.
This movie
reminded me of like how charming just Gerard Butler can be, but like, oh man, you gotta get some better scripts. Like you gotta work with better material. You're so likable.
Well, I mean, was he wanting for work at this point? I mean, Gerard Butler is still a pretty good name. I can't imagine that any of these actors would be like
this was not like a big budget movie. Like,
you can tell by the special effects.
I think this really was just a studio finding out that White House Down was being made.
Yep, and so
they felt like there was a market for White House Siege Die Hard like movies. So they're like, all right, we'll see your Channing Tatum and Jamie Foxx with Gerard Butler and a weird combination of Aaron Eckhart and Morgan Freeman.
Yeah.
Morgan Freeman, who is in another big Hollywood competition movie, the Armageddon movie, that was competing with Armageddon.
Oh yeah, Morgan Freeman was in Deep Impact.
He's in Deep Impact.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, he's a veteran.
He has a history of being the second fiddle.
Yeah.
So now we cut to the White House, and Aaron Eckhart's talking with his son in just a great scene where I just want to bring up one line from the end. There's a point when Aaron Eckhart's like, all right, we're going to Camp David this weekend. And the kid's like, I hate Camp David. Can't we go somewhere else? You know, and I really thought for a second the kid's going to be like, you know, somewhere where mom didn't die. But then he's like, you know, somewhere like the beach. And I'm like, oh, okay. I thought that's where the scene was going.
Why would they go to Camp David again? I know that's a place to go if you're the president, but...
Like, your wife died there.
You're right.
Yeah. You're so upset about it that you actually had to get rid of your weed secret service agent,
you can't see a guy's face
there?
Who saved you, but...
But you can drive over that bridge to get to the...
Oh, they still haven't patched that hole up.
Yeah, like, that seemed odd.
I have no one to box with.
And kind of there's this like...
Who's going to take the whole package out? Where's Big Top? Oh, Big Top.
And we get... there's something going on, and I was having trouble following it. Like, whatever's happening, the North Korea is having some kind of political strife in the world of this movie. And
just a generic bad guy to throw in there.
The North Korean government is coming to the White House...
No, the South Korean ambassador is a Trojan horse.
South Korean ambassador is arriving at the White House with Dylan McDermott, who we're now told is now private security. We barely saw Dylan McDermott as a secret service agent.
Yeah, I know.
Agent,
it's like there
we're
was
like, oh, he's private.
Now he's
security
now he's a private guy and he's working with the South Korean security.
Let me just say, you know what Dylan McDermott's problem is? And this isn't necessarily a problem in life, but it's a problem in roles.
Okay.
Is in the opening scene, they're like, he's like, oh, I'm coming up on retirement and all this stuff. Like, Dylan McDermott in real life is like in his early 50s. When like, yeah, you might think about retiring.
Yeah.
But he looks like he's 30 still.
Yeah. Yeah. Right.
So it's weird where he's playing these characters where he's like, ah, time to hang it up.
Yeah.
Like he's some like seven-year-old, but really, he looks like he should like be just starting as a Secret Service agent.
Yeah.
Or like maybe he comes up into the spot that that Gerard Butler.
Right. He seemed like the guy that Gerard would. Butler,
He seems very miscast in this. Yeah.
I think it's just there for a familiar face. People would be like, oh yeah, as they're like watching the movie.
Again, it's great for Dylan McDermott that he looks 20 years younger than he is. Yeah, but when you place him in a role of his actual age, it just looks bizarre.
He doesn't really do
anything. Like, he could be a grandfather.
It's your first day.
Yeah.
I'm getting too old for this. I'm 28.
Yeah. And at the same time as the South Koreans are entering the White House, there's an unidentified aircraft flying over Washington, D.C.
How would it actually get that far?
I can't imagine it would.
I cannot imagine it would.
The airspace like start way out in the ocean?
Way, way out in the ocean. Like, no aircraft is just flying right over downtown right Washington, D.C.
The White House. Like,
hey, who are you?
Wait, where do you come from? Yeah,
that's not how it
works. Hey, stop!
Yeah. So the crux of this movie then comes from they realize that there's a problem. This unidentified plane starts shooting at Air Force jets. And the Secret Service says to President Aaron Eckhart, we've got to get you to the safe room. And for reasons that are not clear in that moment or at any point in the film, President Eckhart is like, hey, the South Koreans are coming with me too. Which point, the Secret Service is even like,
that's not protocol.
Not cool. Yeah. No, they're not. And he's like, they're coming with us too. Their whole party is coming with them to the bunker.
Which is true.
Like,
if they had just...
I mean, I guess in reality, if you figure like if like an important diplomat was in theory with the president during a terrorist attack, I mean, I guess it doesn't completely. It's not completely out of the realm where
it's pretty out of the realm.
But it'd be kind of wouldn't it be like bad PR though if like another country's delegate or president got killed in the White House?
It would be. I think. I mean, I'm only saying this is.
I don't know.
This is a weird
kind of
example.
Unprecedented situation.
I have some experience with the Secret Service.
Being president. Oh.
Some experience with the presidential office with the Secret Service. And I get.
Were you a Secret Service agent?
Well,
God, Alex.
If they were in that situation, it would be. Their entire focus would be on the president and it would be like the president was in the bunker. They would probably put those people and be like, hey, here's this other safe room for you, but like it would be everything would be about the president of the United States. And they would not be taking people who they don't even know. We later learn that they don't even know who some of these people are. They would not be coming into the bunker.
What about if President Clinton was still in office and Monica Lewinsky was there? Do you think they would have taken her?
They might have been like, all right, that's cool.
Like, it's run its course, or...
We might be down there for a while, you know.
The president might need some company. Just checking.
That, I think, there would be an exception made for.
Okay.
So this plane is flying through Washington, D.C. It's just like...
It's like firing Gatling guns out of each side, like at random people.
It's like a war plane.
Yeah.
It's like people are literally exploding like sacks of blood.
Yeah.
Yes.
On the street corners.
It has Gatling guns, like we were talking about. And
then they like bomb the Washington Monument, which...
Well, and Gerard Butler, in the midst of this, he's sitting in the Treasury like... doing nothing.
He's like throwing a rubber ball at the floor, like bouncing a rubber ball like he's bored.
And he sees all of this going on, so he goes running out, and you get... Because they have to establish... And I like when... I understand why movies do this. They have to establish Gerard Butler as the hero, so he's got to run around and be like, you know, hey, get down! Get down! Giving these people basic instructions like... Don't get hit by a bullet. You know what I mean? Like
take cover from that machine.
Yeah.
It's killing people.
Which at first I laughed at him, like, well, they got to have him do something, so I understand why they're doing it. But at the same, and then I'm like, there's a lot of people in this movie who are completely opposed to the idea of cover. People do not want to use cover. Yeah.
Like, ah, let that plane shoot its fancy
yeah.
Gatling gun. I'm going to the store.
Yeah. And he makes his way to the White House. Gerard Butler makes his way to the White House, where he sees he shoots one suicide bomber, but another suicide bomber blows up the security.
Suicide bombers are like standing right next to each other too. It seems like they'd like not be.
I know.
Kind of maximize.
Yeah.
Why were they even suicide bombers? Like.
I don't know, because they had all these
other things going on.
This they had like a bus rigged up.
I know.
Well, it would seem if these are terrorists are from North Korea, they would have a slightly different agenda than like fanatics, like, you know, like Al Qaeda terrorists. So one would think that they would be more like an organized military type operation without suicide bombers, more like throwing grenades and firing machine guns.
Yeah, considering the firepower they had, I feel like they could have just thrown something and gotten the same.
Yeah.
The tactic doesn't seem sound when you find out the goals of this particular terrorist organization.
Did you guys catch that one brief scene? It was right before Gerard Butler got to the White House, but I think it was right after he like tackled those two women and told them to stay down. But there was that one guy in a suit with like an automatic weapon like firing into the sky.
And the plane.
Is that guy just like a mercenary? Because no other like White House officials or law enforcement were like in that area, like everyone was headed to the White House. I'm like, is this guy like some weird ex-commando that like goes around with a machine gun and just in case something happens?
Why are you shooting at the plane? What was that guy's plane even like? Got it. You know, like
that was me, guys.
I didn't understand that.
Also, I don't know much about aerial warfare, but when the warplane starts firing off that dispersing fire, does any plane have that much like dispersal ammo to block those missiles that were coming at it?
Well, they knew they were probably going to be facing some anti-aircraft missiles. And they just
was laying it on for like a minute.
Yeah. And then does it twice. Yeah. I was like, you can do that twice. Yeah.
It was a big plane. I guess they had some space.
I guess so.
So now there's all of these terrorists moving towards the White House because they breached the gate. And this is where, like, I felt like this movie does not paint. If I was a real Secret Service agent, I'm sure they hate this movie because it makes them look.
Except for the whole prostitute
guy runs into the White House and gets like 100 pieces of the president.
This might be the least of their problems right now, because all of the Secret Service agents in this are like. The first time you ever played like a first person shooter on Xbox, they're all just like running around like in the open, just wildly shooting at things and getting mowed down by the terrorists. I mean, like I can only imagine the power ups the terrorists would have gained if this was a game of Call of Duty.
Well, I was even thinking like in one of the scenes, I was like, do they like turn on the cheat where like they can't miss? Because like every time the terrorist would shoot a weapon, it'd be like a headshot.
Yeah. There was one guy I'm pretty sure had like a 30 kill streak going, you know, and this is like pouring out of the front door like, hey, like, you don't know.
There's that one scene where they have like the gun trained at the front door and they just keep pouring out and just getting shot like when they take one step outside and Gerard Butler's even like, don't cut out, and they still keep coming out.
It's like one of like Normandy of like those when the boats open up and those, but it's like, this is a door. You don't need to come out of it.
Yeah. Aren't there other like flanking maneuvers or something?
And anything. This is like such shoot out a window. Like,
Or they can scramble more planes. I mean, that's
And it's such like a ragtag group of terrorists.
It is.
They're like coming out of like school buses and stuff, like dressed in their garbage day clothes. Trucks,
Yeah.
Like they just got out of work.
Gotta go, boss. I got a thing.
I gotta go downtown. Just gonna grab these grenades and go downtown.
I just had no perspective at this point. See, actually, this is the one point where I would have liked to have seen how much time was elapsing. Because there's like no perspective at this point. Because you see at first like some terrorists coming out of, you know, garbage trucks and all kinds of things. And you're like, okay, it looks like there's maybe like 15, 20. And then, like, there's one aerial shot. It looks like they have a whole army that's descending on the White House. And then, like, they'll show shots where it looks like they're almost at the front gate. And then they'll show another one, and, like, they're once again 50 yards away.
Right,
yeah. Well, the geography of the White House front lawn is ever-shifting in this movie.
Yeah, it sometimes looks like it's 50 yards. Sometimes looks like it's 5,000 yards.
Yeah, and at one point, it looks like it's, like, my front yard. And you can just walk out to the street. Yeah. And at the same time, the South Koreans in the bunker take over they all pull out guns and are like, you know, start shooting people, and now they have control of the presidential security.
And bunker. Of course, that traitor Dylan McDermott is one of them.
It's right.
And his reason is because he thinks the president bought his spot.
Yeah,
which he bought the election. Oh, I hate Wall Street, and people bought the election, so I'm with the North Koreans now. I was like, really? That's it?
Yeah, Jack's not like kidding. That's thin. This is really. I have a note on this. I'm like, that's pretty weak.
Like, because seriously, like Aaron Eckhart is like, it's a cliche scene, but it's necessary for a film like this. It's like, why? Why did you do it, Forbes? And Forbes, ironically, is his name. Forbes says, because you billionaires rig elections all the time and Wall Street chaos, yeah, or something like that. Well, that was it. I was like, huh?
It really felt like Dylan McDermott was basically like, I'm going to kill all these people and destroy the White House because, you know what, if no one's going to tackle campaign finance reform, then I will.
The things you have to do to get noticed these days.
Yeah.
Dylan McDermott's agenda was vastly different from like everyone else from North Korea. Like they're all like bent on world domination and destroying the earth, and he's just like, yeah.
It's like, yeah, those super PACs, and they run those ads, pork. And they don't have to say, I approve of this mess. You know what? That's it. I'm killing everyone.
The joke's on you, North Korea. We're going to fix this. This country can be better.
That's right.
It really is pretty crazy.
Paid for by Dylan McDermott for campaign finance.
That's right.
And at this point, I'm like, oh, okay, well, this is pretty crazy, but I guess the Army's going to have to step in to help retake the White House. They do show up at the White House. They don't do anything.
No, they just kind of set up a perimeter.
They set up a perimeter, and a guy calls in. He's like, all right, we're waiting for more intel. What intel?
Just storm the building.
Terrorists have taken over the White House. What intel are you waiting for?
Their super plane is no longer circling, so they basically now have complete domination of DC again.
Yeah.
They can lock down the city and do what they need to do to capture these guys.
And Army snipers, we actually see this scene like through the lens of Army snipers. The South Koreans go up and launch a remote control spy plane from the roof of the building. No one is concerned about this. Even the characters whose eyes we are watching this through seem like, huh, well, it's a cool plane. You know, they just throw this drone up there and they're like, all right, you know, okay. We're still waiting for intel before we do anything. Yeah. Don't shoot any of these terrorists. We have easy headshots on. Just observe the situation. So we'll be talking more about that. And this is the point where now... Gerard Butler has made his way. He was not immune to walking in the front door of the White House, and he's
inside.
Yeah,
the other two guys he goes in with like are shot instantly from picking their heads up.
Yeah.
He's just like, oh,
yeah,
stroll right through the front door.
Yeah, and when the terrorists pull out the Gatling gun in the front yard, Gerard Butler is the guy who's like, stay down, like trying to.
Everyone just keeps pouring out.
Yeah,
but then when he walks into the White House, there's like. No bodies at the front.
It's because they all came outside to get shot.
They
there should have been there should have been like 50 stacked up at the door. You shouldn't be able to get through the front door.
Yeah,
ridiculous.
And it officially becomes Die Hard in the White House at this point, where he's by himself. And
I did like his line about how they most likely closed off the air vents. Because I was like really hoping for a scene where he's climbing through the air vents.
That's right. Yeah. He did say that. Yeah. And if this is Die Hard, I think the Angela Bassett character is the Reginald Vell Johnson character.
I guess so, because she's in the war room with Morgan Freeman acting president because he's the Speaker of the House.
And she's the one
Robert
who's
Forster,
like...
who's the Army guy.
Yeah. Well, because Robert Forster is kind of like the bad police guy in Die
Hard.
He just
wants to like risk lives and risk running in and shooting everyone up.
And Angela Bassett is more supportive of John McClane / Gerard Butler.
Sneaking around.
Yeah.
And you know what they should have had during the explosion scenes? There should have been a shot of Bruce Willis running around and shouting, damn it, I'm on vacation! Like through the bullets.
Yeah.
Like that would have been awesome.
Yeah.
I work at the Treasury.
That actually, you know what?
Like he's sightseeing.
Would have been a hilarious cameo if like, Bruce Willis in like that white tank top was one of the guys also running across the White House lawn, and he just got mowed down. You know?
Barefoot.
So now Gerard Butler is sneaking around the White House trying to take out terrorists one at a time. Based on the Die Hard template. He does kill a guy with an Abraham Lincoln statue. Which
I will say that was there were an awful lot of presidential portraits to establish in the White House. I mean every president was represented. Yeah. You know, like every 5 minutes there was like a shot of like a presidential portrait, and then it like panned over to the...
They hung on a shot of like the Kennedy one for like a few seconds. Like, I thought that was like foreshadowing something. Or
I thought they were too, or I'm not sure. They really wanted to drive something home with viewers. What it was, I'm still not sure of. But
this is the White House.
Yeah. Or like...
Well, like Truman. They hung on Truman for a while too, which I thought was weird, except that later on, Diamond Face from Die Another Day was talking about how when Harry Truman remodeled the White House in the 1950s. He didn't bother to redo the woodwork or whatever, and somehow that was going to be like...
No, yeah, like hollowed out the structures.
Or hollowed
the walls.
Out.
Yeah. The walls are hollow.
Okay.
But I like the conversation during that too, where he's like, was it 45 or 46? I think it was 45. Like, like, why are you concerned with what year it was?
Yeah,
he was showing off.
I really wonder Kennedy portrait, if they just wanted to remind people, like, hey, a president has been assassinated, and somewhat recently.
But an assassinated president aided in the killing of one of the assassins. The Lincoln statue beating?
That's right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Justice. Abraham Lincoln, terrorist killer. That's terrorist right. hunter.
Not just a vampire hunter.
Yeah.
I really thought at this point that Morgan Freeman was going to be in on it. Because they had that one scene in the Oval Office near the beginning when they were discussing what to do with North Korea. And he was the only one to suggest going to war.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, oh, okay, this is clearly Morgan Freeman pulling the strings because he's wanting to go to war. It looks like this is going to have to do with nuclear weapons and they're going to force the president to launch them.
Right.
And then he walks in and they're like, oh, you're the acting president because they have the president and the vice president in the bunker.
Yeah.
But that didn't go anywhere.
It really doesn't go anywhere all movie long. I mean, you could make a strong case that the Morgan Freeman character is irrelevant to the film because he...
Well, except to teach the audience how it would work, because Angela Bassett makes sure she clearly states, you are the Speaker of the House. Therefore, since the President and the Vice President are incapacitated, you are now officially the President of the United States. And I thought, yeah, I know that. Just go on with the story.
Well, as soon as they introduced him as the Speaker of the House, I was like, okay, he's going to be President at some point in this movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Morgan Freeman is the Speaker of the House. He's going
to
be President.
He just serves as giving someone for Angela Bassett and Robert Forster to talk to. Like, there's no... Like, none of them have any kind of arc or real involvement in the film, other than it's just like, oh, we can cut back to them when we need to, like,
just for someone time. For Gerard Butler to say what's going on.
And then whenever he succeeds, someone to go,
I just felt like they put in so many what ended up being red herrings with him, because there is even that one scene a little bit later when, like, they just get done talking with the terrorists and... They're like, oh, Morgan Freeman, what should we do? And he's sitting there and he's like, Molly, get me some coffee. Two creams, half and half. And everyone's like looking around like, why is he asking for coffee in a situation like this? I was like, okay, this is another sign. He's like kind of cool and calm even though he's in this pressure situation. So he knows what's happening. Once again, they just gave you like these shades of his character. But like you said, in the end... He didn't really have a character. He was just there to fill a seat because someone had to play that role of calling the shots.
Yeah.
It's like, why even go down that road?
I would even also argue you probably could have combined his character with the Robert Forster character. Because there's points in the movie where you're like, oh, maybe Robert Forster is in on it. Or like, he's not either. Just...
This was one of the few movies where like, everyone, like with the exception of Dylan McDermott, whatever, pretty much everybody like who you thought was a good guy and a bad guy from the beginning, really,
that's what they are.
Kept.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was hoping Connor was going to be in on it.
That's true. Yeah. Because he does, Gerard Butler finds Connor, the president's
son. Well, because the idea now is in the meantime, the terrorist is... trying to hack into these codes, but he has to do it at some kind of like an hour by hour. There's some kind of regular interval. He has to put these codes in.
Well, this is the first.
They're going to use the implication is that they're going to use the president's son as leverage to get the president to give up his code. Because each person in the cabinet has a different code so that no one person can take it over.
Right. And these are nuclear codes. Yes. Right, nuclear codes, yeah.
This is around the point where the main terrorist contacts Morgan Freeman in the war room and everything.
Yeah.
But come to think of it, like, why did he even contact them? Because this wasn't like one of those things where he's like, we need a helicopter and a plane waiting for us at 8 a.m.
Well, they did request that.
They did request that.
Yeah, yeah, but at the end of the late, movie. Yeah, at the very yeah, yeah, end. Yeah.
Well they were like, they wanted them to.
They just wanted them to know they had the president? Because, like, they didn't really need anything else.
They kept telling them to withdraw the fleet and
the fleet
and the soldiers from the DMZ.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So they really were sort of asking about that. Although they're, well, we'll get into their motivations because I'm somewhat
unclear. Which was basically his plot in Die Another Day. Was to annihilate the demilitarized zone and let North Korea move into South Korea. So he picked the diamonds out of his face, got a little gene therapy.
Grew some hair.
Yeah.
Well, I think this was maybe a distraction, like in Die Hard with the terrorists saying, like, we want this and this and this, but they're actually just trying to break into the...
Because in the end,
you find out what they're actually trying to do.
Wait, what were they actually trying to do?
They wanted to get all the codes so they could blow up the nukes in the silos and just destroy America.
Yes, you're right.
America.
Yeah.
So this was just an elaborate... This whole Seventh Fleet thing was an elaborate destruction. Okay.
I think that's what happened.
Yeah. So Gerard Butler finds President Sun in a secret passage that the kid knew about, and Gerard Butler's like, all right, I got to get this kid out of here. So he brings him down to the basement where there's a chimney they know about that leads out to, like, basically the lawn. It's basically like a vent in the lawn, and the kid's going up the chimney. Gerard Butler has to kill brutally snap the neck of another, which, by the way, this movie is a lot of brutal kills. Another terrorist who almost discovers them. This kid, the President's son, is able to escape by going up a chimney right up to the front lawn. The army is able to come right up to the White House to grab him, exit and grab him. What do they not do? Send some army guys in to help Gerard Butler. They're right there.
Also, too, like, they had a sniper looking at the guys on the roof, the sentries on the roof.
Yeah.
So why, like, to make sure they weren't looking, but I don't understand why they didn't kill them.
Why don't they shoot them?
Yeah,
I guess.
Gerard Butler's killing everyone in the White House, so it's not like if they lose a guy, they're going to be like, oh, now we're going to kill the president. Because they lose,
And they already established,
like, 20 terrorists.
They need the president for the launch code.
Yeah.
So I don't understand why they didn't kill those two guys on the roof and just...
I don't.
Is so, it, like, sneaking up to the White House to get the kid? And
is there any reason why the army didn't send in a couple of, like, rangers through the chimney?
Through the chimney, through the front door.
I think you can make that case that they didn't know what they wanted at that point, so they were worried if they launched a counterattack, they might assassinate the president. But at this point, when you kind of figure out, like, all right, they need the president and his cabinet for the launch codes, like,
yeah.
They're not going to do anything to him as long as they still need it.
And to make it even clearer, in the world of this movie, the main terrorists never know how the president's son got out. They were completely unaware that this was even, like, an open door to get in. The Army Rangers could have snuck another team in, and the terrorists at any point would have been like, we have no idea how these guys even got in.
And the funny part, too, is, like, they make it sound like getting the son is critical to the success of their mission, because Aaron Eckhart makes it clear he's not giving up the code unless, like, well, he doesn't say it, but it's made clear that if his son is captured, he's probably going to give up the code.
But at
no point really show the terrorists actively looking for him. You know, like, they show that one dead terrorist has a picture of him. But, like, it's not like there's, like, this full-scale initiative of the seemingly hundreds of terrorists that are in the White House.
And they're looking for him. Why even introduce the Connor character at all? Because he's hiding in a wall. Gerard Butler comes in, kind of gives him a reassuring, you know, wink, I'm going to get you out of here alive. He sneaks him up the chimney vent. One guy almost catches them for some tension, which is almost instantly deflated by a brutal kill. The kid is rescued by the army guys, who are brazen enough to walk right up to the White House but are not willing to go the extra mile and go in and kill these terrorists. And then you never see him again. Right. There's literally no reason for this kid to be in the movie except to set up what Brian was saying. They're not going to get the code from me. Oh, yeah? Mm-hmm. And then he comes in at the end of the movie with the gun to the kid's head, which is cliche, but one would expect it. So why put the kid in the movie at all?
And then when Rick Yoon found out that the kid was rescued, he didn't even seem that upset about it.
Right.
It wasn't like, my plan.
Yeah. And they set it up so much. Like that scene in Camp David, they show Gerard Butler like quizzing him. He's like, how many secret compartments are there in the White House? Where's the emergency exit? Like, they set it up like you think that's going to be the climax of the movie, that somehow the kid's going to use his knowledge of the White House. And he does use the knowledge, but it's like, at the midpoint of the movie, and like Jack said, like there's no tension around it.
Can I tell you what, during that scene at Camp David, what I was sort of thinking was going to happen / hoping was going to happen? I thought this was going to be a Home Alone situation with the kid in the White House, and he knew all these tricks, and the terrorists were going to be getting hit with like paint cans.
They're getting tarred
and
feathered.
Yeah, and he was going to be like using all these like
things. He's putting the White House ornaments on the...
I really kind of, for
a minute. That'd be a good matchup of Die Hard and Home Alone, when John McClane doesn't have his shoes on.
I really kind of thought that's where it was going. And you're right, they don't really use any of that.
I forgot to... This is backtracking, I'll make this real quick, but it was my favorite line in the movie. I completely forgot to bring this up, but it's a scene right before, and when they're in the bunker, but right before the terrorists take over, there's one Secret Service agent that comes up to Aaron Eckhart, and he's like, excuse me, sir. And he like gives like an extra beat.
Yes.
And he's like giving him like a weird look, and then he's like, critical information.
Yeah.
And then there's like another beat, and he takes him aside, so the audience, and he's like,
be like,
the terrorists are on the White House lawn.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh.
Yeah.
Like, you could have saved like a minute by just saying, holy crap, terrorists are entering the White House.
Right.
They could be in this room.
Right.
Right. Maybe.
Right.
Maybe those Koreans that we don't know anything about who you brought into the panic room.
Yeah, who we just...
Let's watch out for.
Yeah, we just brought in like a dozen people. We don't even know any of their names. Yeah.
Mr. President, I think you should take a seat.
I rewound that. Yeah. He's like, all right. That was funny. Are you sitting down for
this? You want an iced tea? Yeah. I can get you an iced tea.
Critical information.
Okay. Hold on, sir.
The White House is under siege for the first time in 200 years.
Yeah. A blinking red graphic at the bottom of the screen. Caution. Important information.
It only could have been funnier if he was like, sir, hold on. I'm going to write you a note. I'm going to fold it into four corners.
Urgent memo. Check your email.
Check your email. So I just sent you a text.
Danger, President Eckhart.
So now the kid is out, and they somehow the bad guys now know that Gerard Butler is in there.
I guess it's because he calls them. He's like, hey, asshole.
Oh, that's right. He pulls
I'm the one killing everybody.
Yeah, yeah.
And then he asked Dylan McDermott, is this guy a threat? And Dylan McDermott said, nah, he's not a threat.
Well, so Diamond Face sends Dylan McDermott out, and he's like, take care of him.
Yep.
And
here comes talk about ruining the upper hand.
Yeah.
Yeah, like literally this little diehard scene that they have here.
This is... So Dylan McDermott finds Gerard
Butler.
At least
Hans Gruber was like smart enough to take advantage of it a little better.
Yeah. Dylan McDermott does not take advantage of it at all. He finds him and he's like, hey man, what are you doing here? He's like, what are you doing here? It's crazy, huh? Everyone's dead. It's so weird. Like, it's so awkward. It's like no one forgot to write this scene and they just had to like make it up on the day or something.
That guy, Gerard Butler and Dylan McDermott are pros. Just let them do their thing. Yeah.
I like to turn on the camera and see what they do. Magic happens when those lights come on.
Yeah. What are we going to do? We got to figure out what we're going to do.
How Gerard Butler isn't suspicious at all. Dylan McDermott, like everybody's been mowed down, but Dylan McDermott magically. And Dylan McDermott admits that he was with the Koreans.
Yeah.
And Gerard Butler knows it's the Koreans that have taken over the White House.
Yep.
Right. Yep. Yeah. Yeah, and doesn't ask Dylan McDermott any questions like...
No, Dylan McDermott just sells himself out.
Yeah.
Because, like, in the middle, it's like, Gerard Butler's totally buying into it, and Dylan McDermott's like, man, that Kang is really crazy, isn't he? And Gerard Butler's like, how do you know his name?
Yeah.
He's like,
Which?
Because I work for him. All right.
Which I feel like the only reason that Dylan McDermott got nervous there was because, like, they needed something, him to say something in the movie to advance the plot. But really, in real life, wouldn't he be just like, Well, I was with the Korean delegate. I just told you that. I flew on a 18-hour plane ride with him. So, I know his name.
Yes.
Why was that the thing that Gerard Butler got suspicious of?
Right. Yeah.
Like, wouldn't the suspicious part be, I'm with the group that took over the White House?
Yeah. Gerard Butler's like, wait a second. You know the name of the guy you worked for?
Why was that?
This changes everything.
Oh, so you came in with a terrorist. Okay. Wait a minute. You know the terrorist's name?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Explain yourself.
And then it just turns
I was
into...
just in the bunker. It's a bloodbath.
Yeah.
You were in the bunker?
Oh, man, I just punched the president and put a gun to his head. What? Yeah. Who said that? Can I have another cigarette? Ooh, tough day.
Look at my hand shaking.
What do you
See?
Say we go to Ponderosa and polish off a good steak buffet? Yeah.
So then it just turns into like
Spy versus spy.
Yeah, just fist fight time.
Dylan McDermott, like, surprise. Like, I can see why he's retiring. Like, this was a surprisingly one-sided fight.
Yeah, he does not get
the
best.
He gets his ass kicked.
Yeah, Gerard Butler destroys him. And then, at the end of the fight, now we get, this for the second time in a couple of months, we've had a double cross as Dylan McDermott goes... Oh, man, I've really lost my way.
I thought for sure he was acting here.
I thought he was, too. Like, and I wanted him to explain that more. He's like, look, campaign financing isn't perfect, but it's the best we've got.
I was wrong, Mike Banner. Yeah, the system's flawed, but it's not broken.
Yeah. We have a chance to
You've
fix
given
it.
Me new hope. Yeah.
Why does he come back around?
He got stabbed.
I guess.
It's a deathbed.
But he said it so over the top when he's like, why'd you do it? He's like, oh, Mike, I lost my way. And it's like, clearly this is way too emotional for him to be serious. Right. But no, he was.
He was pretty serious.
Like, one minute, turned on his country and was willing to kill the president of the United States. And then, yeah, as soon as he gets stabbed, he's like, eh.
I was listening to a lot of talk radio. I had one thing led to another.
There was a lot of NPR. Yeah. It wasn't their fault, though.
Yeah. So
you made me see the error of my ways.
Gerard Butler.
With your blade.
Yeah. With your blade to my
There's
head.
Nothing like a knife in the neck to change your perspective.
Yeah. Gerard Butler tells him, like, okay, tell Kang that you killed me. Ha ha. And then Dylan McDermott. Dylan McDermott does that, and he's like, hey, I killed Gerard Butler. I'm out.
Like, he's like, hey, Kang, I got him.
Yeah, and then that's it.
He's like, good.
Well, then Gerard Butler stabs him in the head.
Yeah.
It's like, thanks.
But there's like a weird moment where Dylan McDermott gives him like a head bob where he's like, yeah, do it. Yeah. Stab me in the head.
He should have been like, hey, tell that guy you... Got me. What's his name again? Kang. Ah, gotcha! I knew it! Dylan was like, ah! Oh, Mike! Flapjack! All right, now you can kill me.
So he decides to kill him.
Well, Dylan McDermott even, like, nods his head to kill him.
Yeah.
What happened to Dylan McDermott in the span of, like, 30 seconds?
Yep.
I don't know.
He was like a badass traitor, and then he's like, yeah, I'm wrong. Kill me.
Stab me in the head.
Yeah.
Do it now.
Yeah. Get me out of here.
What are you waiting for?
So now Army General Robert Forster comes up with a plan where they're saying, all right, we've determined that the roof is vulnerable to an aerial insertion. I'm like, no kidding. Whole White House is vulnerable to
insertion.
What made
you think that? The snipers that have had their crosshairs trained on the terrorist heads for the past 5 hours?
Yeah.
With nothing stopping them from
wiping
them out? More vulnerable
if you just killed them on top of the roof.
And they have this big moment where they're like, we're going in through the roof. Which at this point, I'm like, the basement is wide open. You could send
the terrorists, like, don't even know about the basement, except for, like, the one that died.
Yeah.
He just happened to wander down
there.
Yeah,
you said, you could send in everyone at Fort Knox through the basement. But they're convinced, like, all right, the roof is the way to go.
And at this point, I think Gerard Butler, they've already had that scene where he interrogates the two terrorists. Like, they know how many guys are in the White House at this point.
And it's like 20 guys.
Yeah.
Like, Gerard Butler even calls
that
in. And,
like, five of them are,
like,
on the roof, so you take out them.
Yeah.
There's, like, 15 at this point.
There's, like, 15 guys. And they know this.
And half of them are in the bunker, like you said.
And, you know, they got to be low on ammo. They got to be tired. They got to be a little high strung because they're on this dangerous mission.
They got to be high strung.
Look. guys. We've determined they're these guys.
Well, I'm saying
these
I'm
guys
saying,
are stressed out.
I'm saying that gives them even more of an advantage. You could send in a well-rested platoon of like 457 guys.
We hit these guys with a couple guys who've got 8 hours of sleep and a good breakfast. And
these terrorists. This is their first time at the White House. They're probably worked up.
They don't know where the bathrooms are.
I'm just saying, they've been there for hours.
You know how it is when you're not in your own bed.
You can send in fresh troops. That counts for something.
I don't even think there's any food.
That counts for something. They might be at each other's throats. You don't know.
So
they had a long day.
Yeah.
Little Jimmy's tired. He's had a long day. He's going to fall asleep.
We believe several
wagon.
Of their trigger fingers are very tired.
That's
they've
right.
Been blowing people down.
Why wasn't that the dialogue?
It would have been better.
So they send in these Black Hawk helicopters. Except remember
because
when,
he's demanded a helicopter.
Yeah, and remember when the snipers all watched the terrorist launch a drone off the roof, and no
oh,
one had any concerns
the
about
line?
That.
We completely forgot.
RPG.
We're still coming up on that.
Well, there was the.
Oh, there was
two.
There's
RPG.
Two, yeah, there's two times in this movie where yeah, and in fact, yeah, Gerard Butler's yeah. If he'd only said rocket, that would have.
I think maybe they knew, like they were like, well, we don't want to make the same mistakes that Alex Cross did, so we're going to say RPG instead of rocket. Okay.
Yeah.
The filmmakers follow this podcast, and they're very aware of our...
Is there a movie where someone doesn't whip out an RPG rocket and someone doesn't yell something?
You got to yell something.
You have to yell.
Usually it's something like hit the deck or, you know...
But they, it's always too late by the time they yell it.
So they've got... Now the terrorists have... Not only they've discovered and learned to operate experimental Secret Service technology of this Hydra gun that comes out of the roof. There's no reason to believe that the terrorists knew about this before taking over the White House, but are now masters of its operation. Even though Robert Forrester is like, that's like in development technology. And it's this, like, super gun that literally pops out of the White House roof, like something like a G.I. Joe toy from, like, 1985 would have had, where it flips over. And as the choppers start coming in, it is just automatically blowing away anything coming near the White House.
If only they had this to destroy the plane earlier.
If only they had used this earlier. Yeah.
Yeah, why weren't they using that? Like, stop the whole... terrorist White House lawn takeover from the start.
Yeah and I absolutely and by the way, like, and the army guys are pretty close on the ground, like they're very close and no one does anything as these helicopters are getting mowed down by a stationary gun. It is in a fixed location. Gerard Butler has to go running through the White House like a spaz with an RPG, then leans out onto the White House roof, and he might as well say, "Rocket!
Here comes a rocket!"
And he takes it out, and gets no credit for it. Like, you know, and Gerard Butler was trying to say to them, "Don't send these hill." This is the very John McClane moment in Die Hard. Don't send this thing in.
Yeah.
You know, don't send these helicopters in, and. But he, yeah. Then so he manages to destroy the gun after all the helicopters have already been destroyed. So Robert Forster is now like being a total D-bag, like trying to tell like Gerard Butler to stand down, to which hilariously Angela Bassett and the Morgan Freeman are like, he's our only person in there. We're gonna have him stand down. Like, that's really
take a breather, Mike.
Yeah.
He gets a surprisingly small amount of credit this entire time. He's single-handedly wiping out the terrorists.
Yeah. He kills almost every of the 20 terrorists left in the thing. Like when he comes in, I believe he kills all 20. I don't think any other
except for the one helicopter blow up scene. Yeah, he pretty much kills every other one.
You're right. Yeah.
Have we gotten to the brutal Melissa Leo beating scene? Oh my god.
Oh yeah, Department of Defense.
I felt like Melissa Leo, we often say this, was like kind of acting in a different movie.
Yes.
Where this was supposed to be kind of like a fun, like kind of lighthearted, Die Hard-like movie, and Melissa Leo just gets like beat the hell out of extremely uncomfortably.
Yeah.
In like a like scene where they're trying to get her nuclear launch code.
I was half expecting that they were gonna, you know, like full on like rape her to screw with the president. Like yeah. That's how well, like, dark oh, this you got. Went dark, Jack. Yeah. But no, I'm serious. I'm like, watching this movie that's just this fun adventure, but so many people are getting killed.
It's a fun adventure. Fun adventure where we have seen probably
Raiders of the Lost Ark.
When you enter the movie, you're expecting a fun adventure. At least then it becomes
400 people have been killed. Multiple people have been had a knife go into their head, been shot execution style.
When you enter the film, you're expecting a retarded adventure, and then you get all the murders. All the brutal killings, all the violence.
All the implied rapes.
And now, all of a sudden, now you're, it got to a point where this woman is getting beaten up by three men, brutally, pounded, blood, and everything. And I'm like, oh my God, what are they, there is nothing sacred. Are they going to, like, rape her next? That's kind of what I was, that's kind of what I was thinking.
Campaign finance reform. Yeah.
And I was happy they didn't, but I was like, where is this movie going to go? It just kept getting...
This movie is... Melissa Leo is really brutally beaten mm-hmm. up in this movie. Like, uncomfortably. Like, there's a lot of uncomfortable stuff in this movie, but I was like, cool.
That's going to be on the title. That's going to be on the cover of the DVD. A fun adventure.
A fun adventure.
Actually, I want that to be on the Blu-ray of this movie. I would be that would be awesome if I ended up on one of those.
Melissa Leo sees it. Screw that guy.
And there's this is the point, too, when there are... Like, it's famous in movies, or adventure action movies, that you need fun to have a ticket. Fun adventure movies. Like, you need to have, like,
I was expecting, like, an Independence Day type situation, except without the aliens is what I was kind of expecting. I don't know what I was expecting going into this thing, but it's not what I got.
I would like to see a movie, it's Independence Day, without the aliens.
Another quote, Independence Day without the aliens.
Well, I thought it'd be, like, very tongue-in-cheek, because the concept was so ridiculous. I guess that's what I meant. You know, with like violence, but not, you know, like fantasy violence, like not so much blood, not like 47 people dying in 10 seconds, you know, that kind of thing, you know?
Yeah.
I think that's what I meant.
You wanted a fun adventure.
I want a fun adventure. That's not what I got.
A frolic through the woods.
Yes.
So like all action movies, it needs to have the stakes of a ticking clock. However, this movie isn't set with just a ticking clock. There are three ticking clocks. Mm-hmm. They have the ticking clocks of the terrorists want the nuclear codes. Mm-hmm. They have the ticking clock of the terrorists have given the president this, or Morgan Freeman, this deadline of dawn. And then Gerard Butler is given a ticking clock of Morgan Freeman gives him 30 minutes to figure out whatever he's going to do, or else they're going to, I don't know, do something ridiculous. The Navy is going to come in. I don't know. I don't know what they're going to do. Yeah. But... So you're like, oh my God, are I trying to keep track? The stakes are kind of shaky as it is, but we're trying to keep track of the stakes. At one point, I want Gerard Butler to be like, wait, what's coming first? My deadline or the code's deadline or dawn? Which
and let
one?
Me just set my alarms.
Yeah. So he's like, all right, I got 30 minutes. First thing I'm going to do is call my girlfriend to remind people that she's in this movie for undetermined reasons.
Yeah.
We haven't even talked about her. His girlfriend's a nurse.
She's not that important to the story, really.
No.
But they keep talking about this. Even... They set up a date for later, too. They want to go see a movie, and he brings it up here. And I was just thinking, wouldn't it be awesome if they went to see that movie and it was White House Down?
It was White House Down. It should have. That would
it's
have
like
great.
That scene in Blazing Saddles at the end where they go see themselves in the movie.
That, you know what? That would have been a funny line if at the end she's like, I want to see a movie, and if he referenced, he's like, I don't know, I don't like Channing Tatum. You know? Yeah.
I didn't even understand why they made him have a wife. Or a girl, or
they really didn't use. Because like, I thought at some point they're gonna do like a Die Hard and use her against him,
and they, well, because they knew that. they knew who she was, but they never that never comes up.
Well, and I know it's a cliche thing to do, but like they tried to make it seem like he lost everything after the president's wife died. So I was expecting like in the beginning when they're like 18 months later, like he's an alcoholic now and he's down on his luck and he's working at a terrible job, and it's like. No, he's, like, married, he's still in good shape, he has a good government job still, seems to be doing well. Like, yeah. Times really aren't that bad. It's not like he just
misses
needs this to happen to, like, turn his life around.
Right. Yeah, he's doing fine. Yeah. So now the terrorists come up with a plan where they want to send Melissa Leo out the front door.
Yes.
Because... You know, this is all
think of
happening.
It as a fun adventure. Melissa.
It is a fun
you're
adventure.
Walk
moment.
Out the door.
Well, this infuriated me too because like they're like bring her to the front door and they're like okay, go out the front door. Because right. At this point, before this, Gerard Butler had said no more televised executions and blah blah blah. So like we're gonna take her out and obviously we're gonna have her walk out the front door and kill her in front of everybody.
Right.
So she's like walking towards the front door and she like walks out onto the porch and she just like keeps walking straight.
She could have totally darted
like, yeah.
to the side.
I'm like, if that was me, I'd make it to the door and take
again,
off because they're waiting for me to get outside.
People in this movie are allergic to cover.
Yeah.
No one uses cover.
She's like walking slowly, like, and then he raises the gun, and of course, Gerard Butler saves her.
To be fair, she's like been beaten so badly. There's like blood coming from her stomach. So
she's
maybe
still,
she's just like
her life's depending on it.
She's internal wounded. So Gerard Butler starts shooting at them as they're trying to shoot Melissa Leo. Then army guys come up onto the porch of the White House to rescue Melissa Leo. They're 15 feet from Gerard Butler. The door's wide open.
No assistance.
There any
no
of these
door.
Guys could have been. Gerard Butler could have been like, hey, guys, come on in here. Quick. You know, could you use a little help? Yeah. Little help. You know,
some extra hands here.
No one comes in. They're like, yeah, that guy, he's got it all set on the inside. We're exterior only. He's interior.
We got it covered. He's fine.
We'll take anyone you bring out, but we're not going in there.
At this point, there's got to be like, tops 8 terrorists left, you know,
and they're all in the bunker
yeah.
at this point.
Yeah, he's cleared out the rest of the White House.
Well,
it's not like they couldn't bring people.
Gerard Butler could be like, "Hey, that's the main terrorist. He's out of the bunker. Come on, let's all get him." It doesn't happen. Okay, so now they get their wish. The president or
actually,
the army guy.
Sorry, come and think of it. Who was watching the hostages in the bunker when they?
He left
there?
Behind a couple of them. I think. Right. Yeah,
a couple. That one, the tech has. The tech girl.
Oh, that
is
lady.
Down there.
Tech
yeah.
lady.
Tech lady.
IT support.
So now the acting president Morgan Freeman and Robert Forster and they agree that they're going to give in to the terrorist demands. They're going to put a helicopter on the north lawn, and they just say, "Okay, like you guys can get in this helicopter, I guess." Like it's a little shaky, like. I think because it's so dumb, the movie doesn't give you a lot of information on what the plan really is here on either side.
Well, I think that
like...
they cover everyone up. They like cover everyone up so everyone looks like a hostage, right?
11 people come out with black hoods on, so they can't see.
They can't
anybody.
Tell who the president is. They can't tell who the terrorists are. So like, we can't just shoot on them because we don't know who's who.
We don't know who they are. And
so
everybody coming out, they make it clear. The sniper's even saying we cannot identify anyone.
Who. So they put him in the chopper. The chopper takes off.
And the chopper immediately explodes.
Yeah.
Well, you know what I don't get? They had that one scene right before when they get up on the elevator and they show like them putting the costume on Aaron Eckhart and them coming out.
Right. But then he's not.
Which later find out
he's not.
It's,
yeah.
It's only for the purposes of the movie of
for
us
audience,
thinking
yeah.
Aaron Eckhart and the main terrorist were on there. But practically in real life,
there was no reason
they weren't trying to deceive anyone in that bunker.
No, everyone in the bunker knew what was going on. That was just for the audience
to throw us off.
Yeah, or they were like, look, guys, we're really method. We want you to live this experience.
We want you to think that you're on.
I was thinking like when the helicopter blew up, I was like, all right, clearly they weren't on the helicopter.
Right.
And I was like, wait, why did they dress them up for the helicopter?
Yeah. And everyone, like the Morgan Freeman, Robert Forster, everyone's instantly like, president's dead.
Yeah.
President's dead, guys. That's it. You know what? 11 people who just had hoods over their head and we couldn't identify at all. There's 100% chance that that's the president. He's dead.
Yeah, until Gerard Butler's like, wait a minute.
Gerard Butler's like, this doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, I know.
It's like when they went through that whole thing to request a helicopter to kill themselves.
Yeah, I know.
Gerard Why Butler's would like, they do
what?
That? Kang does not operate that way. Yeah. Morgan Freeman's like, and then Gerard Butler's like, this doesn't make any sense. And Morgan Freeman's like, no, I think this makes sense.
Yeah, even
makes
the,
sense
the,
to me.
The TV commentators
I
want to like,
be president. He's dead.
The TV commentators are like, we've gotten information the president has been killed. Like what information?
They took over the White House, executed a plan that probably took 15 years to put into action. Yeah. Also that they can kill themselves on a helicopter.
Yeah. Well, if you want to go, then you may as well go some style.
Nobody questions it except for Shrek.
Like, yeah. And we should...
I like that his reasoning, too, is like, that's not something Kang would do.
I know Kang.
He should be like, that's not something a human being would do. What are you guys talking about?
Yeah, I like how he does something. He's like, that's not Kang's style about the guy he figured out an hour ago.
Yeah.
Never
met him before, who the government also admits... They don't even have a picture of him as of 30 minutes ago.
They go, oh my God, that's the most wanted terrorist in the world. We've never seen a picture of him.
What?
That doesn't even make sense. Like,
and then they're like, why didn't it occur to us that he could be working in the South Korean government?
Well, they didn't have a picture of him because he went through that weird, bizarre dream machine and had his genes rewritten.
He was really that British
guy. He had those
guy.
Diamonds in his face, so without them, they don't recognize him.
Is this movie saying that Kang was working a full-time job as like the South Korean Secretary of State and on his own time was the world's most famous terrorist?
Yeah.
Okay, well, he's a really busy guy.
Yeah, right. He is.
Yeah. He's got a full agenda.
Talking about people who are stressed.
Sir, we have a feeling that he's extremely stressed out. He's working two jobs. He hasn't slept for hours. He's got a bad layover in London, and he's on a time change. It's like 6 a.m. to him right now. This is the time to strike.
And then I want to bring up, too, all the way through the movie, some of the president's cabinet have been giving Kang their codes. Because President Aaron Eckhart had this whole plan of, like, it doesn't matter if he doesn't have all the codes, including mine, he can't launch them. So Aaron Eckhart has actually been encouraging other people
to give their codes.
Give up their codes.
To help to save their lives, I guess. Right. Yeah.
Now we find out the president's plan was stupid, too, because the nuclear missiles can still be detonated in their silos, which everyone...
No, they got the code. They got the last code, but by using like a code, like a decoder or something. Because one of the people in the... I think it was Angela Bassett's like... There's no. It would take them 3 days to get three codes, and they're like they only needed one code because they got all the other codes.
They only need one.
So they used like a decoder to get. Well, no. The thing was, the thing wasn't to launch missiles. It was to destroy missiles.
Right.
After they'd been launched.
To wipe out the
so
area right. surrounding.
They thought like I don't know what they thought the plan was, but their plan was to actually just destroy them before they'd been launched, so they just destroyed.
Well, that was their plan. The president was like, these guys only want to launch the missiles. So he was basing, the president's whole plan was like, I'm going to stop them from launching the missiles. And then basically Kang's like, you thought we wanted to launch the missiles? Congratulations, you figured it out. We don't want to launch the missiles. We want to blow them up where they are. In which Aaron Eckhart and Robert Forster and everyone's like, oh my God, we never thought of that.
I'm like, okay. I like how in the next scene when that's revealed though, that Aaron Eckhart's like just back in his suit. Yeah. So once again, after dressing him up for no reason, they just undressed him.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, time to take off the hoodie and sweats.
Yeah.
Now that's the scene I want to see.
Yeah.
And so now it's like Gerard Butler's like, and this is at this point in the movie that he definitely is losing some of his American accent or his accent.
Oh, he's tired.
He sounds full like Tom Hardy in Mad Max. He's kind of got that kind of voice.
He does have a little of that. And he's like, okay, so he runs down there, takes out a couple of the terrorists, and it just turns into like fist fight in a tunnel between Diamond Face and Kang and Gerard Butler.
Well, Kang shoots the president because he's fighting with the president for a gun. The president gets shot, and then Gerard Butler shows up and starts fighting him.
Yeah. Which, by the way, what happened to the terrorist tech lady, who was sort of the other character that they were developing?
I think she got killed.
Did they put her on the plane?
She was on the helicopter? Okay, because it was weird. She didn't really get an exit from the movie, but they sort of...
I think they put everybody on the helicopter except for Kang and the president.
We wanted to tie up some loose
ends. Well, there was a few other terrorists, remember, that were with them when they were exiting the building.
If I was that tech lady, I'd be like, how did I not get one of those like gets to live spots? Yeah. Like, I was doing all the work.
I know. She was like the second most important person.
Yeah. And Gerard Butler looks like he's losing the fight, and then he, like...
Well, Kang just, like, looks... He's, like, diverts his attention.
He's, for some reason, distracted by the president just bleeding out next to him.
He gets... Yeah. I guess his mind wanders as he's choking
Gerard Butler. Yeah, he's, like, got it, and then Aaron Eckhart's like... come on, Mike. He's like, huh? And then Gerard Butler, like, counter. Like, that's the opening he needed.
Because Kang is just kind of like, oh, I'm so tired of winning this fight.
This is so dull. This is boring.
What do I do now? How long is this going to take to choke out? I'm so tired.
So he now gets...
I need some Brugger's bagels.
Gerard Butler knifes him in the head.
Just like he said he would.
Like he said he would. And then the president's like, nuclear weapons. and Gerard Butler has to go running in.
He has to be told what a hashtag is as he's intensely typing this code.
It's the craziest scene. It's like he's making a terrible customer service phone call. Like, you know.
I like, too, that they didn't even have, like, the
deactivation code ready.
Like, they had to be like, after they realized Mike was there, like, Oh, hold on a second, Mike. Like, hold on. Get the
somebody's
codes
going
and...
to get that code you need.
Yeah, like how they're like, said, right, the president's safe. They're like, woo, okay, yeah. Mike, disaster averted.
Mike, we're going to put you on hold for 15 seconds. Well,
Robert Forster actually says, he's like, hold on, Mike. There's like 30 seconds until the
It's like, did they, like, it's great that the president, like, was saved, but did they, like, forget that in a minute every nuclear weapon that they owned was going to explode?
Yeah. Right. Like, they were even prepared to stop it.
Yeah.
Well, they even showed to try to stop it. That one map that they show?
Yeah.
Like, they show, like, at one point right before they deactivate it, like, I guess the simulated destruction. Yeah. And they show, like, the whole country blowing up.
Yeah.
It's like, who cares if the president was saved? Like, the entire nation was going to be wiped out.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, yeah, the nuclear weapons. Sorry.
Yeah. Hey, is the president's kid still okay? Where's that at?
Have you had anything to eat, Mike?
Yeah.
We're worried about...
Worried about your stress levels. You know?
So they deactivate the code with, like, 2 seconds remaining.
No, because literally, he deactivates the code, he hits enter. The clock's still ticking,
It goes for another, like, 7 seconds.
I said, let me guess, 3, and it stops at 3. Yay! I was like, it literally
should have stopped at 007.
Like, it should have stopped at 007, like in Goldfinger right now.
You know what I would have messed up when they're like going through, like, they're like, whiskey, foxtrot, hotel. Like, I know if I was in that situation when they said Sierra, I'd be like, shit, do they mean like Sierra Nevada, like the pop star Sierra? Is it an SRC?
Yeah. Just say letters, it'll take less time.
Yeah. I just Googled her on my phone. All these weird stories are coming up. Do you guys know what? You know what? All right, back to the codes. Yeah.
But there's that weird moment where they're like, yo, Tango, yo, Sierra, hashtag. And Gerard Butler's like, huh? They're like, hashtag. Yeah. What?
Krispy Kreme. Wait.
Yeah.
Like, it was actually spelled, or the donut company. Is it C or a K? Which one?
Is it 2 Ks or just one?
1 K, 1 C. Okay. Which order?
So
it would have been funny if the movie ended with hashtag, watch hashtag, shift, like in MacGruber.
That would have been good. Yes. I was
like,
I was
right in the middle of it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sally, I don't have time to argue. MacGruber, Banner.
My Banner. So
he saves the White House and almost stops a nuclear strike. Banning. He doesn't know what hashtag is because he isn't on Twitter. Banning.
How funny would that have been if Robert Forster was like, aren't you on Twitter? So he picks up the president. They walk out the still open front door of the White House where still no army guys have come in to assist him. And then we get kind of like a very diehard like line, like, you know, Gerard Butler's like, sorry about the house, sir. And the president's like, I believe it's insured. To which point, like, everyone ever watching it groaned audibly. And now, and like, everyone in, like, the war room is, like, clapping, like, yeah! And I'm like, clapping? This is a disaster. There have been so many failures.
There's, like,
in national security.
There's 457 fatalities.
Yeah.
The vice president's dead.
Not to mention, they actually pulled the 7th Fleet and all the soldiers out of the demilitarized zone. They actually did it. Kim Jong-un is waiting to invade South Korea.
Only 2 of the hostages survived, the president and Melissa Leo.
Yeah, they're the only ones who survived.
Not to mention the entire Secret Service branch. Yes.
You came within 3 seconds of every nuclear warhead in the country being detonated, and this was all basically caused by terrible decisions by the president. The president's like, yeah, give up your nuclear codes. Hey, bring those South Koreans into the bunker with us. you know, hey, Secret Service agents, I'm just shocked. File out the front door like your kid's leaving school on the last before that, summer break.
I'm shocked that he's still president in the sequel.
I know.
How did he get reelected?
What a wreck. And the movie just ends with, like, the president giving a speech and a firm handshake between him and Gerard Butler.
And it dissolves to an American flag.
Yep, which says, that's we're it. Still bros.
Mm-hmm. Still a better movie than White House Down.
I actually never saw it tonight. Yeah, I'd be curious to see White House Down somewhere down the road. This was not, even as much as we busted on it, this is not the worst movie we've seen.
It's a fun
adventure.
It's a fun movie. Yeah,
See, it's a fun adventure. See, now who's laughing?
A fun romp, Brian Muir.
The one thing that really bothered me about it was just how just insanely violent it was. Like, I don't mind violence in movies, but it's like every time they shot someone like in the head, there's like a splatter of blood on the wall, and four people got stabbed in the skull.
It's just like really executions violent. Executions in this. Yeah. Funny bit of trivia. So the director of Olympus Has Fallen was working while they were making this with a producer of White House Down on a documentary about Suge Knight. So they were going to production meetings for this Suge Knight documentary with both of them being like, hey, how's it going on yours? Pretty good. How's yours? Imagine how weird that is. The two of them making the same movie.
So what are your terrorist demands? Oh, yeah.
Do you guys have guys getting mowed down on the front yard of the White House? Okay, yep. Yeah, all right.
How competent is your how competent is the military in your film?
Do you have in the movie?
Yeah.
Two? Do you think that's too many?
Who's your chief of, who's the guy who gets the temporary, like, your House of Representatives guy who becomes the temporary president? Oh, okay.
Well, that's another reason I kind of got confused, because I saw this movie in theaters, and I saw White House Down, like, on one of the movie channels, and in White House Down, I think there's a lot more double crosses in White House Down. There's a lot more, like.
This was sorely lacking in double crosses.
Yeah.
But there's, I think it's the Speaker of the House character in White House Down that actually is one of the bad guys and who actually was, like, what I thought. See, that's why I got confused. I couldn't remember if they were both like that, but in that one, like, the Speaker of the House actually does want the President and Vice President dead so he can take over.
I see.
And that's one of the reasons why I couldn't remember it, but it's like, I know when you're talking about a movie about the White House being taken by terrorists, you can't, like, how many different plot lines can come from that, but it actually is amazing how many similarities there are between the two movies.
All right, our So Wrong It's Right question is, which movie made more money? White House Down or Olympus Has Fallen?
Made more money in general or made its money back? Made more money in general? Okay.
I'm going to say White House Down because of Jamie Foxx.
Yeah.
I think in 2013 he was pretty...
I'm pretty sure it was White House Down because I remember that movie made a lot of money and I don't remember Olympus Has Fallen doing well.
Although Olympus Has Fallen has gotten a sequel, so...
I'm going to say Olympus Has Fallen just to be different, but I mean...
You are different, Jack.
Yeah, I'm going to say Olympus Has Fallen, though I do... I'm probably wrong.
Ha! It was a trick question. You thought I was asking a real question? Ha! Turned the tables on you once again. I Dylan McDermott it. Actually, there are no wrong answers. Olympus Has Fallen made more money in the United States. It made $99 million compared to $73 million for White House Down. However, worldwide, White House Down made $205 million. And Olympus Has Fallen only made $161 million.
Oh. Nobody in Korea wanted to see it.
I know. I mean, White House Down, I guess Channing Tatum and Jamie Foxx must be huge, big draws overseas. Yeah, I mean, I guess that movie has more star power.
Yeah,
that does. Like, Olympus Has Fallen doesn't have as much star power to it. So.
Yeah.
But yeah, Olympus Has Fallen did win in the U.S., where the White House is located, and then lost overseas.
Where that White House is not located.
Where it is not located. Those are, you know, for people who just wanted to see a buddy cop movie with Jamie Foxx and Channing Tatum. I think that brings this one to a close. Again, not the worst movie we've seen.
To tell you the truth, that the best moment of my day was when Cody informed me that there's a sequel and watching the sequel. As stupid as this movie was, I actually got chills. I'm anticipating this sequel because it's so ridiculous. It's like, yeah, they got Angela Bassett back. Yeah, they got everybody back.
Yeah, yeah. And I would like to, as much as we've busted on this movie, I like Gerard Butler a lot, and I would like to plug a good movie he made called Rock'n'Rolla, which I think is very underappreciated. It's a Guy Ritchie movie, sort of his third in the, like, Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels, Snatch, and then Rock'n'Rolla is kind of the third in his, like, unofficial trilogy. And it's a really fun movie, and Gerard Butler is very funny in it, and just a great movie. So, I am a big fan of Gerard Butler, but...
I'm still waiting for Phantom of the Opera 2.
Well,
Actually, there is a Phantom
of the Opera 2, isn't
there? But with Gerard Butler.
Oh, okay. What's the name of that?
Love Never Dies.
That's right. It should be like Love Never Dies, The Chandelier's Back, or something like that.
Revenge of the Chandelier.
Now that chandelier is personal. Anybody got anything else they want to add? Is that going to bring this one to a close? Mm-hmm. The show will be back. Probably sans me for a little while. Hopefully I'll be calling in. But the show must go on with spectacular guest hosts. All right. On that note, on that mysterious note. I know. I guess it's not that mysterious. You know, be taking care of some young children at home.
Your children?
Oh, they are my own. As far as I know.
Well, we don't know yet.
Yeah, we don't know yet. I mean, we're still...
Well, they're... Yeah. They're...
Yeah.
Your wife is giving...
We're not taking anything for granted at this point.
Yeah.
Yeah. But very excited to be taking care of some young kids. And I will return. Like James Bond, I will return. And I will return in Moonraker.
In space.
Yes. All right. See everyone soon. Bye.